Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Nicholas Irving became the first African-American sniper assigned to the Army's 3rd Ranger Battalion, which had fought in Somalia in the historic Black Hawk Down mission. His autobiography, The Reaper, was released this week and coincides with the controversy over the hit film American Sniper, about the most lethal sniper in U.S. history. The film has been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture. Irving's fascinating story tells of his bloody final tour in Afghanistan that made him a legend, earning him the nickname Reaper after he set a record for enemy kills in a single deployment. His account of his development into an expert assassin offers a rare view of special operations combat missions through the eyes of a Ranger sniper during war. The name of the new book is The Reaper, and we welcome Nicholas Irving to the Roundtable. Nicholas, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you.
At what point did you realize you wanted to tell your story?
I was about maybe, I want to say, 2 or 3 years after I got out of the service that I wanted to open up and really talk about my experience of, and the contribution the 75th Ranger Regiment made in the global war on terrorism. It took quite some time, but it was more therapeutic than anything else for me.
Therapeutic in what way? What did it help you explore?
I suffered from some pretty bad PTSD after my last deployment. A lot of bottled up emotions, a lot of survivor's guilt, and it was something for me to actually, get out there and tell my story and just share it. Went through a lot, I saw a lot, and keeping all those emotions bottled up, it was something that I guess it couldn't stay in that much longer, so I had to say something about it.
The book has obviously been on the table for a long time, but it comes out amid a great controversy over a movie, American Sniper, and of course that of Chris Kyle and his life. So you enter then into the discussion as a sniper with people saying, many people saying, well, okay, the film is pro-war, or that it depicts a personality that wants to do this. So where do you come in the discussion, and how do you look at your position as a sniper and also take all of those other voices into consideration?
Well, I look at the statements that were made, and as far as it being pro-war, I think it's the exact opposite. The movie is more or less about the time and the struggles that families go through while guys are deployed and the struggles we go through while we're back at home. That's just my personal opinion. I don't believe it's pro-war. If that were the case, I think it would have, tracked and documented all of Chris's 155 or 255-plus kills. It wasn't all about that. It was about struggles that, guys like us go through after seeing being deployed for that long.
And you really address this in the book, and it seems to be something, as you just mentioned, that it's very important for you to say what it has been like to come back, of what it has been like to then re-engage into a normal society.
Mm-hmm. I do. I think that it's something that the medical field is just scratching the surface on how to, really work with guys and treat guys like us. I think they're really starting to dive into, the effects that, 10 deployments or 14 deployments has on an individual. No one's done that before. This is the first time we've ever seen an individual with 14-plus deployments. But I think it is important to share that story that way. So history doesn't repeat itself. We don't go through this again. It's already documented. We know what happens, and this is how we can fix it.
You're the first African-American to serve as a sniper in your battalion and known, as the book title indicates, as The Reaper. When did that name start to creep in and something that caught to you?
I heard about it. It was in 2009. I had racked up, I had just started racking up a few guys on that last deployment, and one of the assaulters that came up to my room, we were out in the hallway, and he had said that, man, you're like the angel of death. And so it spun up for a little bit. My spotter heard it, and he was a 1970s guy, born in the 1970s. And his favorite song was that Don't Fear the Reaper by, I think it was the Oyster Bake or something like that. And it just spun from there. I didn't really hear too much, or I'm sorry, think too much about it. It was just one of those things that, I mean, everyone had a nickname in battalion. It was just something that was there.
The song "Don't Fear the Reaper," that's Blue Oyster Cult.
Mm-hmm. That's it right there. Yeah, that's it.
So this comes out of the number of kills, and 33 kills as a master sniper. What does that number signify to you? What does that mean to you?
It doesn't really mean anything. I think it doesn't mean I got enough. If I can go back in time and got just one that I know for sure would have changed my life, I would just be known as the guy with one. I was saved. My life was saved by Corporal Benjamin Kopp, and it was one of those situations where I wish I got the guy who got him, but it just didn't work out that way. I mean, I'm sure, I know for a fact the other guys that I ended up killing, it saved lives, but I don't know how it would pan out. I'm not sure. If I can go back in time, I know I would change that at least, but the whole overall number 33 for 4 months, that doesn't, I mean, I was, you know, killing in Iraq and I was 18 years old, so the 33 doesn't really mean anything.
Hmm. Do you understand what it is about you that makes you a good sniper?
I think it's the drive. I've always wanted to do it since elementary school, and it's that drive that, you know, I made that dream come true. I have to be good at it. I'm living a dream at that point. I don't want to lose it. I don't want to give that dream up.
When did that dream begin for you? When did the dream begin of wanting to be a soldier, of wanting to go in the Army, and ultimately an Army Ranger?
It started in, I want to say, the third grade. I've always known I wanted to be in the military. Both my parents served in the Army. But as far as being a sniper or whatever, it was probably like the third grade. I was watching the Charlie Sheen Navy SEALs and the Delta Force movies with my dad. And that's when it really peaked off. I used to want to be a Navy SEAL originally. And I went to the Navy Sea Cadet Corps. I passed all their prerequisites. I was scuba qualified or had my PADI license at the age of 15. And I was ready to go into the Navy. I took their medical exam, and it turned out that I was colorblind. So there was no way I could be a SEAL, and there's no way I can be in the Army infantry. But luckily there was an Army nurse who had heard my story, and she came over there, and she gave me another I guess testing of the color vision test, but she forged all the documents for me, and there I am, Army Ranger, contract, jumping out of planes, and then that allotted me the chance to go to become a sniper.
There's a chapter in the book entitled "The Chechen Comes Calling," and you have encounters with a rival sniper, and it's fascinating because of this rivalry. How did you realize it and know who it is and who the other person is?
Well, we were starting off when it was a 4-day originally like a 5-day operation. The fifth day is when we encountered the Chechen. But the 4 days we were leading up to that, we had a chance to work with these Marine Scout snipers and their unit. And we had got word that we were going to be in this guy's backyard, and he's known as the Chechen. He's supposedly been around since the Soviet occupation. Has 300 plus kills, and the guy was really good. That's when we first heard about it. Little did we know that we were going to actually, you know, go head to head with this guy on that fifth day. On the fifth day, we were pinned down by the Chechen for about 3 hours, and then we were surrounded, and it's like a 360 ambush. The entire firefight lasted 9 hours, but three guys got hit. One ultimately died, was the guy, you know, who saved us, me and my reconnaissance team, in this little small hole pinned down by the Chechen. Him and his machine gun team came in and rescued us out, and 5 minutes after that, I watched him take a round, and ultimately he died from his wounds.
I guess for you, and you describe it in the book, but I'm curious as to what it is like when there is really someone who's a rival, of someone who is there doing what you do, and how you react to them dying.
Oh, it was a scary, humbling experience. I mean, I was young at the time, 22 years old, 23, and you know, like any young kid who's doing really good, they kind of get cocky about, you know, their level or their skill set, and that happened to me. I was a cocky guy, and that was a very humbling experience, knowing that, wow, this guy is really, really good. I thought I was good, and I knew that I was going to die that day, and a few other guys were, but don't know how it did not happen. Bullets were snapping by our heads, you know, inches, and sometimes I thought we were hit, and it was just it was one of those things. But it was a very humbling experience, and it put me back in place, and I had to calm down and, you know, reevaluate a few things as far as how can we get this guy. I went way back in my training and remembered the snap bang theory, how I can counter this sniper and at least find out where he is. But it was a very humbling, scary experience. I can recall a few times I just wanted the round to connect, and I wanted everything to be over. I wanted to die that day. It was intense.
There is a picture in the book of the buttstock from Afghanistan in 2009 with 33 ticks marking the enemies killed in action. How do you find out? How are you notified that indeed the shot you took? Do you know right away when you killed him? You know that?
Oh, definitely. Like, that's the only, it's just me and him, and he's in my scope and where I put the bullet at. It's pretty obvious when that guy's not, I mean, yeah, he's dead. There's, you know, either, I mean, the head was removed, or you can see other different things. And the guys usually go up there and they take pictures to report it back up. And, you know, this guy had a weapon and all this. We have to be able to justify all of our kills. So that was the other way of verifying, but you know right away.
When you came back home and you start to realize that you're feeling the effects of what you have gone through.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like? I mean, you talked about that a humbling experience a moment ago. What is that like to realize that you don't have that, for want of a better term, that power anymore?
Oh yeah, you feel small, insignificant, I guess. Yeah, very insignificant, and you realize how fast you can come and go when you're in a good position, like in your on top of things, you have this godlike mentality. But when you're on the other side, you realize how small you really are and how insignificant. You know, I mean, you have to take... After that, I learned this new... I always believed in live life day by day, but I changed my view on that. And I, you know, say live life second by second, because they can go at that next second. It was very, very, very humbling for me. And when I got back, it was that the PTSD. I think that's one of the things that really bothered me, and you know, I became somewhat of a self-medicating guy, from alcoholic, and it was a bad experience for those 2 years when I was out.
How good do you think we are as a country, and even as a how good our armed forces are, mm-hmm. in helping men and women like you who are coming back and saying, okay, now we realize that this is some of the problems that you'll be having in helping you return to a normal life?
I would say we're not that good. No. Could we be better? Of course. But I think after all this is said and done, we're done occupying countries and we're all back home. We're going to have to sit down and really discuss what needs to happen to make the process faster. I mean, you can't have a guy waiting on a list for a year or 2 years before he even receives help. And it's too late by then. It could be too late by then. There needs to be some major change within our, you know, veteran affairs and how guys like us, when we return, how can we get help? At the moment, I don't think we're where we need to be. I don't think it's a great program. It's okay, but it's not great.
How are you doing now?
Doing pretty good. Actually, I bought two German Shepherds after I got out, and they've been really instrumental as far as keeping me somewhat sane and happy. I'm a loner type guy. I'm not the type of guy that has a bunch of friends. I can count on, you know, a hand how many close friends I have, and
yeah,
you know, minus the guys I served with. But I'm just very lonely type guy, and that was one of the key things was getting those Shepherds and writing this book. It changed for the better, big time.
German Shepherds are good friends, though. They're
oh, definitely. I love them. Oh yeah,
they're
love
really
my
good.
Dog.
The book is fascinating, and it's quite a story. Nicholas Irving is the author. It is The Reaper, autobiography of one of the deadliest special ops snipers. It is published by St. Martin's Press. Nicholas, I thank you very much for being with us and for sharing your story. I do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is The Reaper. Nicholas Irving is our guest. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.